Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Joshua David Stein from the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour. Tonight we'll be discussing children's literature. You know, most children's books are about one of three things: food, feelings, or going to sleep. Sometimes all three at once. But one thing for certain is that someone is going to feel something, someone is going to eat something, and everybody goes to sleep eventually. It's never too early, I guess, to start inculcating a sense of mortality. As a father, I end up reading and rereading children's books many more times than I do books for adults. Some like Brown Bear, Brown Bear, What Do You See? I can repeat verbatim. Brown Bear, Red Bird, Yellow Duck, Blue Horse, Green Frog, Purple Cat, White Dog, Black Sheep, Gold Fish, Teacher, Children. I can read it in my sleep, and sometimes at 5 a.m. when my youngest son, Augie, gets up, I am reading it while still asleep. What makes a successful children's book, I think, is that it takes its own whimsy seriously. There's no talking down to and no talking over the kid. Even though it's the parents who end up buying the book, the best of children's literature welcomes children on their own terms. Of the three subjects, obviously, tonight we're going to talk about food. Some books about food, like Puck's My Foodie ABC, are pedagogical. Some, like Peas, are preachy. But in the best of them, food is just another character in a compelling story. Tonight on our show, I'm pleased to welcome Ron and Judy Barrett. Ron illustrated and Judy wrote the children's classic, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And yes, before it was a movie and a sequel, it was a book. I spoke to them recently over the phone. And we also have a very special musical guest. In fact, I can say it's the musical guest that I love the most on the entire show. It's my son, Achilles Heerenstein. Now to Ron and Judy.
Ron, Judy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Josh. Thanks very much. Hello to everyone out there in Radio Land.
Hi from over here. This is Judy.
So you guys wrote Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs in, what was it, 1978?
I wrote He Drew.
You wrote He Drew. That's right.
He's the illustrator.
Tell me, what was going on in the world of children's literature at the time? How did you concoct this now classic story?
I don't know what was going on. Well, I don't know if it had anything to do with the concoction.
It was Maurice Sendak was at the time.
He was a big mocker.
I think.
Well, his early Sendak, so Hole is to Dig, and all of those early Sendak books were happening at
night
that time.
In the Night Kitchen?
Came a little bit later.
Was that other one? There was
Where the Wild Things Are?
The controversial one, right? Well, they were both controversial.
Well, I mean, you know, talking about food and children's literature, I think Mickey and the Midnight Kitchen was, along with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, one of the biggest sounds, sort of, on the landscape of children's literature and food, right? I mean, that's a little more sinister. Although one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about is I was rereading Cloudy. Do you guys call it Cloudy amongst yourselves?
Well, that's the nickname.
We call it by its first name. We're familiar.
You know, once you get in the later parts of the book, it kind of gets a little dystopian, like that page where one day there was nothing but gorgonzola cheese all day long, and the next day there's only broccoli all overcooked.
At Floyd's birthday party?
Exactly, yeah. Who's Floyd?
Beats me.
Floyd.
I've never known anyone named Floyd.
Floyd Bennett Field.
That's what I was going to say.
The only one I know.
That's my only Floyd. Oh, you know, there is a Floyd, but that's not why we did that. Remember the Floyd cooking show? Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that at all.
John, do you remember that?
Does anybody remember?
No, it was wonderful. It was on Channel 13, and this guy, this really crazy guy named Floyd, did this cooking show. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
We'll YouTube it later.
What?
We'll YouTube it later.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back maybe to Judy. You had mentioned the other day, the book started with one line. What was that line?
For some reason, I thought of the line that said, Henry walked outside and got hit in the head with a meatball. I don't know what made me think of it. I don't know what, if anything happened that made me think of something falling from the sky. I really can't imagine. And then I went from there thinking, of course, that's food coming from the sky, so that's like weather. And I started to play around with different weather forecast things like cloudy with a chance of. And that's how the book got named. I always write my titles before I write the book.
And you let that guide the rest of the
chapter. I think I do. I always write the title, and I usually write the end so I know where I'm heading.
Right, and the end in this case is like a story of fleeing from an... Well, the very end is you kind of... One of the things I like about the book is that it brackets it in a sort of grandfather story at bedtime, which
mm-hmm.
kind of similar, in fact, to The Princess Bride, in that movie, that you have this very intense middle part, and then it's kind of wrapped up neatly and not so scary by the time you end.
Get to the end.
Yeah.
Well, then when you find out it's a dream, of course, then you can sort of eliminate some of the scare,
right,
since it wasn't really a nightmare. But it sort of comes back to being okay, because they end up going back to normalcy,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, food is in supermarkets and they have to get used to it. So it sort of returns to normal life.
Yeah. And Ron, tell me a little bit about the illustrations. They're whimsical in one way in the subject matter, but the way you treat them is not, you know, childlike at all.
No. I think as I said, it's like telling a joke with a straight face. I wanted to make everything seem plausible, that you could really see the grizzle and the fat on the steaks in the sky, and it being plausible made it seem more absurd and more funny for that reason.
In some of the panels, like the Main Street, I'm looking at that one right now.
Yeah,
it looks very specific. Is Chew and Swallow based on some town upstate?
Was that based on a town on Long Island? Actually, it's based on a town near where I had a summer home at the time, called Cutchogue, New York, went out there originally to sail and eventually bought a home with my wife at that time and our children.
Cutchogue is a real life Chew and Swallow.
On the North Fork of Long Island, yes, out beyond Riverhead.
But it doesn't actually rain meatballs and peas and popcorn.
No, there's a diner there. That's about as close as, you know, to that.
You haven't been out there lately. You don't know what it's doing.
And some of the stores in the town were based on stores I had known in the city or on people that I was familiar with. I mean, I think there's Gigi's Frock Shop,
mm-hmm.
and Gigi was someone that I knew at the time. And then there was, I think there was Gem Hardware, and there was a Gem Fishing Supply Store on 23rd Street at one point in time, and... So there are those rather personal associations to some of the landscape in that scene.
What was the creative process? You are no longer married, but you were married at the time. What was the mm-hmm. creative process like? Because I imagine the illustrations add so much to the text and kind of change the tone. For instance, that page, which is my favorite page, the one day there was nothing but Gorgonzola, shows three sort of unhappy commuters with clothespins on their nose, and
mm-hmm.
the next day there's only broccoli all overcooked is the man and a woman.
Yes, the romantic dinner.
The romantic dinner with ginger ale. and next day there are Brussels sprouts and peanut butter with mayonnaise is Floyd's birthday party.
Oh, just ruin that.
Just
party.
What every child wants.
Exactly. But, you know, just the text itself, it could have been any image. So how did that work between you two?
I remember you sitting at the kitchen table. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that at all. I remember sitting at the kitchen table for an earlier book, but this book was drawn up on 72nd Street.
I don't think we were living together.
We were separated. This book was, in a way, kind of a
reuniting of the creative juices.
And at the same time, a farewell kiss.
So you had separated before working on this.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, and wasn't it sweet of Judy to reach out to me and ask me to draw this book with her?
How long had you been separated?
A few years, maybe 5 years.
I can't even remember that.
Yeah, I think 5 years about, because I think I moved to Grand Street.
Oh, I remember Grand Street, yes.
1973, and then moved uptown to the Upper West Side around 76, so maybe it was 3 to 4 years.
What year was this published?
1978.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the internet, so it was a lot more complicated now. I mean, Ron sends me drawings, and, you know, we'd go back and forth about things, but then it was,
how did we do it? I'm not sure how.
Was it a bittersweet process collaborating in that way?
No.
It wasn't bittersweet at all.
No.
It was a joyful
process. It was sweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was also doing foodscapes for the National
Lampoon.
So I was very immersed in food, in the world of food.
What were you doing?
I was doing these collages for the Lampoon, where I would mix together landscape material and food using
from magazines.
From magazines using old National Geographics or Woman's Day magazines or Gourmet magazines. So you couldn't tell in looking at this landscape whether you were looking at a broccoli or a forest or at a piece of pot roast or Yosemite National Park.
So you were working in the same vein.
Well, this was another sort of food utopia, but everything in the world was edible or not, because it could be the butt of a turkey where the tunnel was going through, or it could have been made of rock. So there was an admixture of food and landscape material, as I said.
Now, were you doing that before or during?
I think during, because I remember doing one on our dining table in Garfield Place.
That's right, the collage.
I was making those food collages,
mm-hmm.
and then I showed them to someone at the Lampoon, and we put together the Wide World of Meat. So I was working exclusively in meat for the National Lampoon.
Well, we all need a medium.
A medium. That's
good, Josh.
One of the things I like most about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is that it's not one of those books which is trying to get a kid to eat his vegetables or do something. It's not really I have two kids, Augie and Achilles, and I read to Achilles, he's three. And a lot of the books I find frustrating because either they always end with the kid going to sleep, like every story just wraps up and then they went to bed. Or it's very cudgeling, you know, about eating, why you should eat vegetables or how cool is this or how, you know,
healthy is that.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's not what Cloudy is at all. It's a story that food plays a part in, but it kind of familiarizes you with food, but doesn't kind of shove it down your throat.
Well, not so to speak. I love food. I mean, I think Ron does too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the time that we were married, I was very involved with cooking and eating. And still am. And I think that was one of the things probably that prompted the whole meatball thing. I love meatballs. I grew up with somebody whose parents were Italian, and I learned a lot over at that house and brought a lot home.
Where was
in
that?
In terms of knowledge. When I was in high school, my dearest friend was, both her parents were from Italy. So I ate there a lot. And they made wonderful food. So I got very into cooking and eating, and I think it's one of the greatest joys of my life to this day. So I'm not surprised that I wrote a book about food. I think it's just very much a part of what I enjoy.
Yeah. It does seem as well that comparing kids' books now versus kids' book then, you know, talking about Maurice Sendak and also people like Tommy Ungerer and mm-hmm. those guys, there was a lot more leeway for books to have a bit of a darkness to them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, looking at this picture of everything going wrong in Chew and Swallow with the donuts rolling down the street, chasing a woman and her baby, and she looks terrified. And
oh, yeah, Macaroni Man, the guy that got the macaroni stuck on his head.
Yeah, and then just the sky, which is just dark with steak, mm-hmm. raw meat. I mean, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
But it isn't. Food apocalypse.
Then. Yeah, I think it's an okay, horrible dream.
Well, because it's a dream, I guess you can wake up from it. But I wonder what you, as people who work in children's literature, among many other things, I should say, think about the evolving and narrowing sort of scope of what's acceptable in children's books.
I don't know that it's gotten narrower at all.
I think it's gotten
wider.
Actually, wider.
Wider.
We're saying, you know, there's a book like Go the F to Sleep. I mean,
oh,
right. Which is, although not for kids, really.
No, but I just found it really quite disgusting.
Yeah.
And I'm not a prude, but I just thought to take something like that and then to have it become a bestseller, I just could not conceive of how that happened, but it did.
Well, I kind of mean darkness. I don't feel like there's a lot of darkness.
Today?
There's a lot less darkness and ambiguity and weirdness. I mean, you look at, I'm sure you'll know that this is a compliment. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is weird. Mickey in the Midnight Kitchen is weird. Why do those bakers look like Hitler?
Oh, not Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. You mean In the Night Kitchen.
Sorry, In the Night Kitchen, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's because he wanted them to look like Hitler.
Yeah. Like a lot of Tommy Ungerer's books. Like
Tommy Ungerer is, yes.
Oh, he's really bizarre.
Really beyond.
Like Moon Man. Yeah. It's just, I read that one to my kid a lot, and that's sad. You know, he says, why is he in prison? Well, then you have to explain to him. Why, you know. And I feel a lot of contemporary books they're whimsical. You know, they're still imaginative, but there's not that...
Not snarky at all.
Yeah, they're not snarky, but they're also not... I don't know. There's not a looming sense of unease, which, you know, I would say growing up in a Jewish household, that...
you lived with that, right?
Yeah, I lived with that. But,
a lot of me is around the corner. The Cossacks are coming. The Cossacks are coming.
Yeah, right after the meatballs.
Maybe before.
Judy and I are both Jewish, so we share that.
Oh, my God.
We share that.
Watch out. Put your boots on. See, now you'd really have to wear boots and Chew and Swallow.
Yeah.
Because God knows what you'd have to step in.
So,
if it's Trafe coming down? In fact, I see it's baked.
What?
Trafe, Trafe. They have one day a week.
Oh, you mean there should be a kosher version of the book?
Yes, there's a spinoff.
Spinoff.
You had also, we had talked a little bit the other day about your proudest moments of how Cloudy kind of worked its way into popular culture. Could you share some of those?
Those things became plastic toys in a Happy Meal, I knew I could die a happy man. That leftover machine wound up in the Happy Meal, and all of those... toys that were created from some of the ideas that Judy and I had and some that Sony Animation had, and they were put into a Happy Meal. Gosh, that was it for me. That was the pinnacle of my experience.
Do you see any of that action?
Any of that action?
You mean Moolah?
Yeah.
Nola.
No.
Nada. Zero.
So you have only the glory to hold on to.
They don't.
I have the plastic toys to hold on to.
Oh, yeah, the plastic toys, but you don't get merchandising.
I have the plush monkey, too.
Oh, that came from Sony. Yeah, I was going to say, one of my, I think the moment that I, you know, when things have, it's a funny thing, joy is very elusive, you know, those incredible moments in your life are so elusive, you try to hold on to them, but they do go through your fingers because time moves on. And I remember when the premiere that they held for us for the first movie of Cloudy was in the city, and they came and sent a chauffeured car out to get me, and that was pretty special. And rode into the city, and when I remember standing outside the theater and thinking to myself, I need to chew on this moment, because this moment is not going to be here. And the evening went by, and then I got back in the car to go home, and I realized it was over. You know, the movie wasn't over, but that joyful moment of being recognized and put up there as the, you know, one of the creators for us was just, I mean, who would have thought?
Yeah,
Ron, would
yeah.
you have ever thought that would happen?
No, to see our names on, 7,000 movie screens.
Oh, I know. That
across
was,
the country.
And on, yeah, it's just, yeah. I wait for the ending of those movies. I always have to wait for the ending to see our names.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it is amazing. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing.
We'll be back after a short break with the musical stylings of a 3-year-old, Achilles Heerenstein.
Raised by the rays of the falling sun, cruel outrage of our true Cupid, they snapped the killer of the mighty Python. So a typical, to Tipperary.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
We are students at Girls Prep, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Now it's time for a musical guest who's gonna sing a song or two.
This is the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour Half Hour. I'd like to welcome our musical guest, Achilles Heerenstein. He's gonna sing a song about food. Achilles, what's this song called?
Poop.
And how does it go?
Poop, poop. That's all there was.
Is there anything about food other than poop?
No. That's it.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on my show.
You're welcome.
Achilles, you wanted to sing another song? About food?
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's hear it.
Thumbs up. Thumbs are not good for you. Still eat food and like sandwiches.
What kind of sandwiches?
Turkey sandwiches.
What other type of sandwiches?
Cream cheese sandwiches.
Cream cheese sandwiches.
Turkey sandwiches.
Turkey sandwiches.
That's all the sandwiches.
Those are the only two sandwiches that exist. Achilles, tell me about bagels.
Bagels, I won't tell you about them.
Why not?
Because I don't want to.
What about donuts?
No, no.
What about pickles?
No.
Achilles, have you ever had a meatball?
I don't want to have one.
Have you ever had a taco?
I don't want to have one.
Have you ever eaten cake?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Have you had cupcakes?
No.
Did you... What?
That was just a musical guest who came and sang a song or two.
I'd like to thank all of our guests tonight, Ron and Judy Barrett, Achilles Heerenstein, and our lovely engineer, Liz Smith. That's it for the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour Half Hour. Have a good night. We'll see you next week.
Joshua David Stein Variety Hour. Joshua David Stein Variety Hour Half Hour.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.